For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
So the truth is, well, first, welcome back, ladies. And it's interesting, just yesterday was at the Hespedim, the eulogies for Ravadi Yosef. Ravadi Yosef, of course, 93-year-old Gadol Batorah, the leading, Rabbi Kushkumer made the point that many of his peers looked up to him as the Gadol of Gadolim, like he was the big of the big. And many questions that no one else would touch went to him. Similar, he's compared yesterday to Moshe Feinstein, passed away in the 80s. He was not just the Gadol, which is already a very small group, but he was, So I'm thinking, as Rabbi Kushkuman, who's eulogizing him, Rabbi Kushkuman met him many, many times, that one of his legacies is halacha. I mean, his main legacy, really, for the Jewish world, is halacha, is keeping, finding out what God wants of me and doing it. And no funny business, and he was known to be lenient. He was not interested in being strict on people. The exact opposite, but, he never swayed one iota from what the truth was. Rabbi Kushkuman mentioned the story that prime ministers regularly, over the decades, would come to him for advice. And there were times when they came knocking on the yeshiva door, and one of the Bachrim, or his son, or whoever it was, went over to Rav Avadya and said, Prime Minister Netanyahu is here. And he said, he's got to wait. I have to finish learning. I'm in the middle of learning. I've got to, half an hour, whatever it was. I've got to finish learning. And he, it was probably not just he was finished and he had to learn, but he wanted making a point, which we're here talking about in Dunwoody, Georgia, that, heads of state come, but the Torah is more important. Now, don't try that trick at home. President Obama knocking on your door, you should probably get it. But the point is, doing the right thing, doing what God wants us to do, it has to be primary in our minds. So, it's a shame.
Aaron went to the funeral.
Oh, boy.
He wanted to go. And I don't know if he ever made it there, but he got to a certain point, and there were so many people that he had to climb over a fence, which everybody else thought was a good idea, too. When he went over the fence, he pulled a muscle on his arm or whatever. But he really felt like he needed to go.
Right.
But so did 800.
800,000 his closest friends.
Closest friends.
Yes. The most amazing thing, though, was it was 4 hours after he passed away. This is not a state funeral, later and everyone flew in. This was drop it all, hop on a bus, and go. We're sitting and learning Torah, and hopefully in a nice group together and continue throughout the winter is a tremendous testimony to his legacy and what he did for the world. Okay. So I do want to briefly review. I suspect you didn't bring all your notes from last year, but I do want to touch on a couple ideas. Oh, you did. A couple of the ideas that we discussed last year in introductory concepts, which was we started with Muksa, if you remember. We spent 4 or 5 weeks on that, and then that was November, December, and then I think it was January, we went into introductory concepts, and this is the one class which I accidentally deleted, so it's not on the web, even for someone to go listen to. But there were a bunch of points that we covered, and 6 of them are going to repeat themselves again and again and again. So instead of stopping and which we probably end up doing anyway, but just to refresh the memories a little bit, we talked about in order for something to be the real deal prohibition, the creative activity on Shabbos, it has to be Meleches Machsheves, which is a thoughtful, intentional act. So we talked first about the first point of the 6 was, are you doing it on purpose? Like you know exactly what you're doing, we call it Mazid. You know it's Shabbos, you know it's prohibited, you're doing it anyway. That's the biblical prohibition in which a person would theoretically, death penalty is culpable, very theoretical, probably never ever given. And then you have shogeg, where you don't know what Shabbos, you don't know this particular act is prohibited. And then we have misasek. I mean, I'm just refreshing your memories. I realize it's not, I'm not doing this slowly enough for everyone to. But just to refresh my memories, and then you can go back and take a look. But Misastik is you walk in the door and you flip on the switch, totally accidental, not thinking at all. Those are the three levels, from most strict to the most lenient of intent. Then we talked about the guy, two friends digging a pit, digging a hole. Reuven is digging it because he wants the hole, and that's the biblical prohibition. And his friend next to him is doing the exact same act. He wants the dirt, and he's doing something different. He's doing something less culpable because his intention is not exactly the way it was in the Mishkan. We said he could have gone to Pike Nursery. Pike Nursery ran out of dirt, so he's digging up dirt. But his intention is really not the classic way that action was done. Then we talk about something which we're going to touch on today, which is a psik resha, which is your intention is to do act A, which could be totally permissible, but for sure act B is going to happen. The classic case we talked about was opening the refrigerator and the light goes on. We spent some time discussing that. So we said there's a distinction he made here between whether or not the B, the result, is beneficial or not. And that's a major factor that plays into this whole thing. If your intention was for A and B happened and it's beneficial, we'll definitely say you can't do it. If it's for A and B is not beneficial, there are circumstances where we can be lenient, etc. Rav Avadya Yosef discussed that many, many, many places with Shabbos. Okay, number four, again, we'll talk about today, and that is it being done normally or is it being done in a strange way? Are you shutting off the light with your hand or are you shutting off with your elbow? And that's a big distinction in Hilchos Shabbos. So, for example, a doctor who will have to do certain things, it is not life, obviously life and death is critical, but if he can do certain things with his knuckle or something like that, he's told to do that. Many examples of that that we'll touch on. The fifth one was, is it creative or is it destructive? An example here is cutting fabric in order to sew, versus ripping textbooks just because the semester's over and you don't want to see them again. One's creative and one's destructive. And destructive, under certain circumstances, is actually going to be totally permissible. And then the last of those six was, is it something that has longevity? Is it going to last for a while or not? So writing with a pen is very different than writing with icing. They're both writing. They're both meaningful messages, which we'll get into later. Mm-hmm. But one is permanent. Or permanent for, in the eyes of halacha, ink certainly is going to last for years, whereas icing by definition is not. It's not going to last very long at all.
So to some people, to some observant people, say it's okay to cut a cake with ice, with letters, or nobody does that?
So that's a great question. It's particularly great because Terry Tenenbaum was telling me that he was going to a shiur in Hilchos Shabbos from Rabbi Kushkaman. And Rabbi Kushkaman mentioned that you're allowed to cut a cake with it says happy birthday on it. And I did a double take, like, what? And I looked up in Rabbi Avadya Yosef, and Rabbi Avadya Yosef says that if you think about it, the problem here, which we all would agree to, is mochek, is erasing. You're destroying the word, which we haven't learned yet, but destroying the word is considered erasing. But you're erasing in a strange way. No one would normally call that erasing, right? That's just not the way you erase. So it is destroying letters, it's erasing in a certain sense. It's not in order to write something on top of it. It's not constructive, it's destructive. It's destroying something in a strange way. It's destroying something which is not permanent. I mean, there's a bunch of reasons why this is not classic biblical prohibition, and you know, from the get-go. And he says, it's a psik resha. Your intention is A, to eat the cake, to cut it so it's edible. And along the way, you're cutting the happy birthday. But it doesn't benefit anyone that the happy birthday is cut. You much rather have the words intact somehow. So he rolls all those things together and says it's perfectly fine, which makes perfect sense. And he does this all over the place, whereas Ashkenazi poskim, I looked up at the same time in Shlomo Zalman's Sefer Shmir Shabbos Kelchosla, and he says straight out you can't do it. So there are different approaches to how these components work together. And this is one of the reasons, you know, Rav Avadya Yosef was famous for being lenient. And
now, is that specifically a Sephardic versus Ashkenazi ruling, or is that just a ruling that happens to be made by a Sephardic?
That's a great question. Good evening.
Someone who happens to be.
That's a great, great question. I honestly don't know enough. I mean, sometimes you can say it's an argument between the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Karo, who's a Sephardi, and the Ramah, who's the Ashkenazi, and sometimes it happens less often than you think. The Sfaradim will do like the Shulchan Aruch, and the Ashkenazim will do like the Ramah, and it's clear it is that type of disagreement. And there are cases, there are plenty of cases like that. I don't want to say there aren't. There are plenty of cases. I don't know that this is one of those examples. I have to look into it a little bit more. So whether it really truly breaks down the way, I'm not sure. I remember coming back from Israel. I was 18, and I came back in the middle of the year for some reason. And I remember sitting down with my Rebbe, Rabbi Esterecher, Daniel Esterecher, and telling him how frustrated I was that halacha was not this exact science as I expected it to be.
You want it to be.
You want it to be, in some ways. And Rav Avadya came close to making it a science. But almost to the extent that he'll list, you know, 20 opinions on one side and 15 on the other, and the 20 win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was unique in that sense. He knew all 35 sources. He could pull that one off. But in many ways, it's not. It's simply not an exact science. But it could, you know, it could well be, and I really should research that a little bit more. I think I shared with you the story about Sandy Glassman and the freezer in Shul, that, you know, I thought maybe you couldn't open and close the freezer because the fan went on. So I discussed with Rabbi Kushkuman, and his answer to me was basically the same rationale. The prohibition itself is rabbinic. There's no light. It's just electricity. And it's a psik ratio. It's not, your intention is A, close the door, B, invariably happens, but you don't really care. And therefore, now he, you know, he obviously knows well, I'm an Ashkenazi, I'm asking him the shaylot for an Ashkenazi shul. He had no problem giving me that ruling. And other times he says, you know, Ashkenazim are one way, usually more strict, and Sephardim are another. So he did not differentiate in that case. But that's classic, you know, Rav Avadya thinking. So I don't have a good handle on that, globally speaking.
I have a question.
Shoot.
During one of the dinners, the warmer that's in the kitchen, I remember Sandy saying, if you open it, take the food out, but you cannot close it and open it and close it again.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
We were just touching on that very issue.
Oh, you did.
Well, I was just saying, I have to do a little more research into that. If the food is not fully cooked, there's nothing to talk about. You can't close it, just like you can't. It came up this Shabbos morning when my kids went over the challah pot and took off the cover. So I said, you can do that this morning because it's fully cooked, but last night there's no way you could have done that.
Right.
Because we know you can't close something which is heating cooking food. Cooking food is cooking food, leave it alone, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with it being raw as Shabbos starts, as long as it's set up properly. But by opening it and closing it, the action of closing it now creates more heat and more cooking. So if there's anything in there that's not fully cooked, it's a no-brainer, can't touch it, it all comes out. If it's fully cooked, mm-hmm. taking out part and leaving in part, everyone says, don't do it. I just made myself a note to research that. I really need to do that tonight.
Okay. It's very conflicting because we just had
Yom Tov and then Shabbos.
No, we just had the Kollel rabbis
right.
say something that's very that differs very much from what Rabbi Friedman would advise.
Yeah, which is?
That you can open and close the stove, the oven, as many times as you want and go in and out.
They actually said that.
Yeah.
Or not in. The Shabbos can't put anything
you
in.
You can
take out
as many different
I think someone told me that.
And I heard it both at Beth Jacob during, because I was one of the two people from here that went to hear it first at Beth Jacob, and then
then
were
you heard
here.
You heard the rerun.
So, and I know because I went specifically to ask here because it was so conflicting, and I'd spoken with Rabbi Pransky there. Because I
and he clarified that you had it right.
He said, yes, you can.
That's what, you know, one of the
and then here
town.
It's like, no, you can't. And
interesting.
You know, for me, it's very conflicting, and as I'm trying to learn so that I am observing it properly, it's very hard. But also, in a community where, you know, the lead rabbi in this community saying don't, I wouldn't do it contrary because people wouldn't eat in my house. Also, like, I wouldn't want to infringe upon their
practices.
Right.
Okay, so you just gave me some homework. I will do some research and then discuss this with Rabbi Friedman because, yes, it does make sense. I wouldn't be on the same page.
Right.
Especially since Rabbi Friedman and Rabbi Pransky are learning the same kollel. You'd think they would come to the same conclusion.
Right.
Not always, but, I mean, that is the beauty, of course, of halacha. You can have varying opinions on the same subject. I mean, all law is like that, especially Torah. But certainly, it's a matter of policy.
They just spent like
hours and hours.
No, like beyond,
yeah.
Like months and months
on these topics, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And going back and forth with Baltimore and
really,
yes.
Oh, so I have to have a conversation with him.
Yeah. So very, very in-depth learning,
right.
As I'm sure everything is learned that way, but they specifically were sitting hours and hours
that
and
issue.
Hours and months, like studying this issue.
Really fascinating.
And, yeah. So it's very hard.
Very interesting. I will look into that because again, everyone says don't, but I cannot think of why you shouldn't. I really can't. And I mentioned to you there is a machlokas about opening the oven when it's not burning right now. Ramosha Fine, you know, I learned this from my Kushkama that Ramosha Fine says no problem. It does not consider a secret ratio at all, and it's perfully fine. Other people see you do that, and they'll, you know,
yeah.
Coronary.
Well, like on Friday, you know, like before Shabbos, before I light candles, turn the oven off, okay? Well, the oven is still warm, so I was like, what if I said, oops, I forgot to put this inside of there, and now it's Shabbos? The oven is off.
If it's off, but more than Yatza lettuce,
which
on the strict side we say 120, something like that, which
yeah.
is pretty low.
Low, right.
Then it's still considered a heat source.
Right.
Can't do it.
I'm usually like everything in there, right. Everything in there.
Right.
You know.
But you know, it is. It does. One of the only times it really comes into play with us is if we accidentally maybe put the fish in the oven to keep warm it. Along with
everything
all the
else.
Thing, and then we have to take the fish out.
Right.
Do we then have to take everything out, or can we take the fish out and then go back?
Right.
Some people put their challah in the oven,
yep.
Take the challah out,
yep.
Then take the fish.
I
yeah, no.
I will get back to you.
Okay.
I will. Okay, and then one other concept that I want to throw out there, which was not on our original sheets. I think we touched on it, but it definitely comes up now. And that is, when there's a rabbinic rule, very often the rabbis waived the rule in a situation of discomfort or pain. So we're going to see, what's an example off the top of my head? We're going to see, for example, someone has a blister. So normally we don't puncture, we don't make holes, we don't operate, all that kind of stuff on Shabbat. I mean, of course, unless it's life and death, obviously. But just for, you know, to relieve pain, generally we don't, you know, there's a long list of things we don't do. But that's the type of thing which is only rabbinic. We'll get to why that is in a moment, but just using it as an example. That would be an example of something where the rabbinic rule is thrown off because of discomfort, because of pain. It could be we had examples of that with muksa, which are escaping me right now. But we'll see, and we'll see examples of this in various places. If there's a rabbinic rule and there's this pain or discomfort, the rabbis say the rule is canceled.
Like you have band aid, like you have something that happens during Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
You need to cover it up. They have band aids now, but you don't. It doesn't pay it. You know,
you just peel
it open, and you
and. You're talking about peeling open the packaging.
Paper. Yeah, the paper
on
the band aid.
You're not tearing it.
I think all band aids are like that now.
Yeah, you just peel back the paper that's already peeled.
I mean, I have a 3-year-old, so we go through a lot of Band-Aids.
Yeah.
When she doesn't need it.
Oh, yeah, that's especially when.
Sometimes it's used as an accessory.
especially these days, they're pretty. Not a problem at all.
They're all
and then the little things
now.
To make it stick, they don't tear. You just kind of pull it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if the packaging is designed, the issue we grappled with the packaging is if the packaging now becomes useful in some way. You know, you're opening a box and the box can be used, that type of thing. But if the packaging is going to be is destroyed in the process of opening it, which this is, I mean, you have to be very creative to make it usable. It's not a problem. Words would be the only problem, really. And then the backing of the Band-Aid itself, you know, it's designed to come off. There's discussion about it, but diapers are like this. I mean, a lot of things are like this. They're designed to come off, and it's not an issue. The issue with Band-Aids, I think we discussed, maybe not, is sticking the Band-Aid to itself. You should avoid that. So that if you're putting a Band-Aid on your finger, you should wrap it around like in a DNA, like a spiral staircase, as opposed to a ring. Because gluing it to itself is an issue of Topher. we didn't get to that either. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, anything designed like that to, you know, to peel off the back is perfectly
fine. I have a question. Now, they're saying on Shabbos you're not supposed to tear.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that...
For constructive purposes.
For constructive
purposes. Right.
Okay, now, let's say we're operating in the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
and you roll some plastic out,
mm-hmm.
the saran wrap, or roll it out on the countertop. Can you just tear it? I know we can't cut, but can you just tear it?
No.
Because you're still tearing the packages to get to the contents.
Oh, so that's what confuses a lot of folks.
Yes.
Tearing the package is considered destructive. So destructive tearing for a Shabbos use is, that's one of the examples where normally there would be a rabbinic rule. It's not constructive, it's destructive. That's usually prohibited. But for Shabbos use, it's permissible. So I remember my Rebbe in Israel, I was 18, and he said, his example was a bag of game pieces. You want to get to play the game, and it's brand new, and the you can rip that bag open and throw out the bag, you know, words aside, and you can play the game. It's not food related, it's not, you know, no one's going to die with, you know, it's just you want to play the game. It's a very minor need, so to speak. That's perfectly fine. So here, to rip open the bag of the pre-cut tablecloth to get the tablecloth is fine. Then you throw the bag away and you're done. To tear the roll, on the other hand, is the tearing is you're creating a useful tablecloth.
Right.
Same as paper towel or toilet paper or something like that.
Okay.
Tin foil, saran, all that kind of stuff is out because it's constructive, not destructive. That is a point of confusion for a lot of folks.
I wish they had a pre-cut saran wrap.
The bottom line is that you don't
care. Good luck. You can invent it. You make some money.
You'd be having it wrapped around.
That would be a trick to figure out.
Yeah, I mean, it could still be wrapped around in a roll, but if it just had breaks. Not perforations.
Yeah,
right.
Just breaks.
Oh, right.
But breaks.
That would be a trick.
That would be good.
Costco would,
I know.
Because the only reason we had rolled out, saran wrap is so that after we were finished we just lift everything up and put in the trash as opposed to using another tablecloth. That's fine.
So, right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so tearing that would be a problem.
That would be
helpful. Yeah. Okay, so let's get to the first page here, which is shearing. Gozes is number 12. Yudbeis is gozes. And the translation is shearing. We're talking about sheep. It is the classic biblical case. You're shearing a sheep with the ultimate goal of making wool, making fabric out of it. Here's the new sheet that we just gave out, page 1. Yours will look a little different than mine. And then the definition is severing or uprooting. Severing or uprooting any growing part of any creature, dead or alive. So severing or uprooting any growing part of any creature, dead or alive.
If there's a growing part on a dead creature, it's a problem.
Well, it means, you know, was growing once upon a time. You know, shearing sheep, typically the sheep's alive, but certainly even if the animal is dead, shaving it, shearing it, all that would be prohibited on Shabbos. So very practical examples: hair and eyebrows, cutting your hair, scissors, razors, plucking, tweezing, you name it. It's any normal way of removing hair from the body is going to be a biblical prohibition of gozes.
And then why is it
here comes
that
a big
Shabbos
question
here. You always find that wild hair, that eyebrow.
Yeah.
Something that you didn't notice before, but it's Shabbos when it's there.
Right. That's to make sure you're honest, you know.
It's trying to get you to.
That's right. That's a temptation.
Or maybe you're a weak
Sarah.
Or maybe you're
a weak Sarah, right.
Not paying any attention. Only
yep.
A Shabbos.
So again, scissors, razors, plucking, tweezing, any normal way of removing hair or from any part of the body is going to be a biblical prohibition.
And where in the Tanakh do you find it?
Well, the 39 are actually not listed in Tanakh, except for two. They're not listed. The 39 biblical prohibitions are actually derived from a discussion of keeping Shabbos next to building the Mishkan. So the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the written oral tradition behind that, is anything which was done constructively in the Mishkan 6 days a week is what you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. It's used as the Gemara, and the Gemara actually is an example of something which is a major, major principle which is only alluded to. And the Gemara contrasts that with other things. Sometimes very small details are explained in graphic detail in the Torah. And the question is, you know, why? Why does the Torah give such coverage to seemingly minutiae and something so basic as this is only alluded to for another time? Okay, chemicals, similarly, any chemical which is used to remove hair, I forget the official term for that.
Nair.
Like a nair is an example.
Nair.
There's a fancy schmancy community, you know.
Depilatory?
Something like that, yeah.
That could be.
But nair is a great example. Anything like that also similarly would be prohibited. It's a discussion, is that rabbinic or is that biblical? But that certainly would be prohibited as well. It doesn't require scissors. Scissors is just a common way of doing it. But any chemical that's normally used for this purpose would be prohibited as well. Animals, we mentioned before, it's really any living creature. So animals are included in this. So pets certainly come to mind. In our world is the most common example. Not allowed to cut nails, cut their hair, groom them in any way, shape, or form would be prohibited on Shabbos.
Now what about, so is that why you're not supposed to like pet the animals because you can...
Good question. I was just going to mention that. Thank you. So petting an animal really would not be a problem. Assuming you are not, you know, certainly rough would be a problem, because then we're going to get into someone combing their hair, human hair. So with animals, as long as, you know, if it's just gentle and there's no guarantee at all that it'll come out, it's not your intention, it's not a secret, it's not for sure going to happen, that's perfectly fine. But to really run your hand through the fur, that would be a problem.
Okay.
You know, there's some dogs you go like this, nothing, but our dog, not right now, yeah,
especially when
it's
shedding, right?
In the summertime,
yeah.
I mean, you go like that and, you know, clumped on. But I'm not taking it out,
right?
It's falling out.
So the question there is it still attached before you touched it? Now it's not, which means you helped them to go through this process, or is it really on the surface already and you're just, you know, it's lying on the,
right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
If it's just lying there, all you're doing is, you know, getting it off. That's perfectly fine.
Okay.
But if you are helping, then there are certain times of year that you wouldn't, you know, should not pet them.
So this brings us to, I mean, it's easy not to brush my hair, put a hat on, come to synagogue, but
yep, that's
if
true.
If I comb my hair, brush my hair, hair's going to come out.
That's
a lot of hair. I don't have a lot of hair.
So that is the main topic here. Actually, let's just touch on one other point before we get there.
Okay.
That's a very important question.
Okay.
And that is chicken feathers. Let's say you're eating chicken, you find a piece of a feather left on that chicken. At that point, or removing its skin for that matter, is a non-issue. Once chicken is cooked, once any meat really is cooked, it's considered, goze no longer applies, because you've, so to speak, unglued the skin or unglued the feather from the body by cooking it. Right? We all know you try and get skin off of a raw piece of chicken takes a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas removing skin from a piece of chicken on your plate, it just flies right off.
Now, is that not another problem, though, in terms of taking out what you don't want?
I thought you were going there. Okay, good. So that's borer, number 7. Very good. So if you recall, that's permissible generally. If it's covering the thing you want to get to, that's permissible because it's considered maceir. It's considered, what's the term? Excuse me right this second. But it is, you're removing an impediment to get to something else. You're not sorting.
Okay.
You are like peeling an orange.
Okay.
You know, you're just getting to... I have a sense that's the wrong thing. But you're just getting to the object that you want. You're not truly... Siluk. Okay. Siluk is removing to gain access. There we go. So that's perfectly fine. So as far as that goes, it's not a non-issue. Yes, if you can get to the meat and it's just the skin's over there and you don't like the skin, that's a problem for her. Absolutely. Sure would be. Okay. So again, once the chicken is cooked, the prohibition of gozes falls off. It no longer applies, non-issue. Now, of course, the big topic here, especially for the ladies, is combing one's hair. Men don't care, and they look forward to the opportunity to walk around without having to worry about brushing their hair, especially the young men. Your 13-year-old son, I'm sure, can relate. My son certainly can.
Oh, actually, it's painful for him.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Totally. He's at the age, you never know, I guess. He's at the age where he wants to look a certain certain way. Okay. Well, be that as it may, it affects different people different ways. Let's put it that way. The question is, can one comb their hair on Shabbos? And the answer is the following. There is an issue here of secretia, that your intention is just to make the hair look good, but hair very often comes out. So it is that secretia. Your intention is for A, the result B also almost invariably happens. And therefore, there are three rules that one must follow in order to brush or comb their hair on Shabbos. Rule number one is it should be a soft brush. How soft? I'm not 100%. It's not 100% clear in halacha.
So like not how soft is soft? Like those
softer
those brushes that have like the whole like full of.
Oh yeah.
Little bad, like right?
Yeah.
Right. Certainly a comb would be bad. Baby brush for sure is good.
Baby.
The question is, do you have to go that far? It's not 100% clear to me how far you have to go, but certainly not stiff. A comb would be out. That kind of thing. Number two is that one should brush their hair gently. The goal cannot be to get rid of all the dead hair or to remove any hair that's about to go. I mean, again, as I said before, if the hair is already out, there's no way of knowing. But if the hair is already out of the pore, so removing it you're not doing anything.
Right.
If the hair is about to come out of the pore and you're brushing it, there it goes, that's gozes. And then there's plenty of hair, which, thank God, is going to stay right where it belongs. So you do have those three categories. The problematic guys are the ones in the middle. They would stay if you left it alone, but they're gonna come out readily if you brush. So, number one, using a soft bristled brush. Number two, combing gently. And number three, one should have a designated Shabbos brush. One should have a brush that is used specifically and only on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. And the reason for that is because it's a very difficult concept to understand, but there's certain things which are called ubdu duchol, which without getting to the term itself, but it means a weekday activity. It's an activity that feels weekday-ish, and therefore to use the weekday implements in doing so, in this case their hairbrush, is not considered, it's not a biblical prohibition certainly, but it's not considered right. And therefore if one designates, this is my Shabbos hairbrush, that already gets rid of all the issues of the dechol.
I do that with a toothbrush.
Right, I was just going to say toothbrush.
I have a weekday toothbrush that I use, regular toothpaste, and then I have a different color one that
the
I Shabbos use
only.
On Shabbos,
right.
That I can use either the Shabbos toothpaste,
mm-hmm.
or mouthwash.
Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit easier for us to understand because there, it's muksa. A regular toothbrush is muksa. You're using it with gel, with a thicker paste. And that's mamafek that we discussed, I think, last year, is real bona fide prohibition. So you switch to a liquid. It's no longer prohibited in that sense, but it is a muksa. The toothbrush itself is a muksa item. Here it's a little bit harder to understand because if you're using, meaning the classic muksa issue doesn't apply in this case. If it's a soft brush, theoretically it's not muksa. But similar concept. I mean, similar, but yeah, a little bit different.
Can you spray like a detangler or something in your hair?
Good question. Yes, I don't see why not.
Okay.
Yeah, not a problem.
If you take a regular brush that you're using during the week and brush your hair, it's going to yank. It's going to
be firmer probably. And
out.
Right.
I have a set, and for me, I don't care. I can like. Yeah, I'm not worried about me, but Liana needs her hair brushed. Like big.
She's not leaving the house until.
And well, it's just it hurts. It causes so much pain for her afterwards. If I don't, especially if I don't get her into the bath right before Shabbos or something it's so painful for her to
brush
after, even with conditioner and all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to brush her hair, but I do have a soft brush, and I have to be careful. And
right. It's certainly not as expeditious.
Yeah,
you know, if you're in a rush, it's tough.
Seems like
but
the only place I should change is get a second one that's designated
specific, right,
for Shabbos that I can do easily.
Right. That's the way to go.
But does the Tangler work?
As a Shabbos fix, but not in general. In general, I have to use a little
brute force.
Hardier substance.
Okay. So yeah, the Tangler is perfectly fine. The only issue with fragrance is on clothing. But fragrance or chemicals like that on skin and hair is not a problem at all.
Her other hair stuff is more like it's just thicker, so I don't use it on Shabbos.
Shabbos, right. Yeah, the liquid spray to Tangler is perfectly fine. Okay. Now, once we're talking about hair, this, some of the sperm show in the concept of lice, which is not necessarily specific to. But certainly, I mean, we should know. I know moms just love when lice is a foot. My wife just. So that the halacha actually says this is an exception to the general rule that we're not allowed to kill things. Lice, you're allowed to kill for reasons we're not going to get into right now. But one is allowed to kill lice. You can remove them carefully from the hair.
With a comb?
But I was going to say, you have to be careful. The combs are very firm.
Right.
And you certainly can't start combing through the hair like you would the fifth time through to try and make sure there's nothing left. But if you've got a strand, you're going through it very gently and you're pulling, you know, one theoretically could do that as long as it's not, like all the knots are out, everything, it's not going to pull hair. It's just trying to get out the lice. That would be okay. I mean, the mandate here is not to set up a situation where hair is definitely going to be pulled.
Okay.
So killing the lice with sprays or whatever is not an issue. Shampooing, I should say, though, of course, is. That gets into an issue of wetting the hair, which we generally don't do. That's a schita issue, which we touched on before. So one should not shampoo the hair on Shabbos for a variety of reasons. But
hopefully you discovered it before Shabbos.
Hopefully you discovered before and certain precautions were taken. Hopefully it's all gone before Shabbos even starts. And it's definitely a challenging situation. Okay, and then removing gum from hair. This is certainly a potential issue. Little kids and they're playing and there goes the gum. So one has to be careful not to pull out the hair while you're removing the gum. I don't know how practical that really is. It's very hard once it's in there.
Okay. Does that mean so you've got gum in your hair. I've had that experience with Shoshana. But anyway,
we'll keep that.
Take an ice cube.
Right. So you can use an ice cube. You can use oil. You can use all those types of things, but you can't pull out the hair. And you certainly can't cut out that little piece of hair, which is, you know, if it's practical, it's the easiest way, I suspect. In many cases, the best thing is just to leave it alone.
Okay.
And let the kid wear it as a badge of honor until after Shabbos. And then you yell and scream and take out the scissors. But one should be careful not to remove hair in the process of trying to get out the gum. Yeah, it probably just depends on how big the gum is and where it is and... Okay, a little too much information there. Removing Band-Aids. So this is also an interesting example of this whole thing of obsecratio that's not beneficial. Removing Band-Aids where there's a concern that hair may be ripped off the arm, let's say, that is an issue, and therefore one should use nail polish remover to try and get that Band-Aid off. You can use oil. Leave it alone until after Shabbos is always a way out. But if one thinks that the hair, removing the Band-Aid is likely to remove hair at the same time, one should just, you have to figure out some other way to do it. Because that, again, is a big ratio. It's an intention for A, but B is going to happen, and one should avoid that situation. Now you can certainly wash this up in water until it falls off. That's perfectly fine.
I mean, if water gets to it and it loosens
and it falls off.
No problem. Right. Intentionally.
Okay.
Yeah, if things come off, is ink in your hand and it comes off just by washing your hands, that's nothing. That's not even, that's nasake. It's totally nothing. even though to rub out the oil, rub out the ink would be a problem of erasing. Rabbinically, you know, it's a lower level, but if something happens just in the normal course of affairs, it's not a problem. Okay, now we get into fingernails, cutting, filing nails. So this again, we're talking about hair really until now. Getting into nails, this again would be a biblical prohibition if one uses a normal way of doing it. Clippers, scissors, any normal implement that used to file or to cut nails would be a biblical prohibition of gozes.
Is there a way to file your nail?
Unnormally? Not normally?
Not normally,
that I know of.
Because invariably, I mean, my nails are probably jagged all week long, but on Shabbos, invariably, and then
that drives you crazy.
You're going to snag your clothes and hose and on and on and on.
Right.
And on.
Yeah.
Hurt somebody.
So, yeah, I don't. That's one way around it, for sure. The biblical, the rabbinic prohibition would be biting or peeling with your fingers or something like that. Some people in the winter, especially, has people have, you know, hair, have skin around their lips.
Yeah.
Atlanta's not as cold, but other places maybe it's even worse. So all that would be prohibited also. Cannot remove skin or nails in even an abnormal way. It's only rabbinically prohibited because it's not the normal way of cutting your nails or removing skin. But that too would be rabbinically prohibited. And that, you know, there's plenty of stories of rabbis telling the students they really should stop biting their nails in general, because it's very hard if you're a nail biter to stop on Shabbos. And therefore, you know, that's an issue for some folks. So that should certainly be avoided. Now, if a nail, like a hangnail, a nail is mostly off, it's already mostly attached before Shabbos starts, and you didn't catch it before Shabbos, remove it with clippers or whatever before to get rid of it, what do you do there? So here, there are some leniencies, actually. If the hangnail is mostly detached and uncomfortable. Comfortable, flat, I don't want to say painful necessarily, like real pain, but it bothers you. Mostly detached, and it bothers you, you are allowed to remove it without clippers, or without scissors. You remove it with your fingers, for example, teeth. So, again, it has to be really three conditions. It has to be mostly detached, it has to be uncomfortable, and then you can remove it in some not typical way. And this is an illustration of the concept we started with, and that is, in situations of pain or discomfort, the rabbi said, all bets are off. So, it's mostly removed, and in many cases in halacha we say majority or most is considered full. Sukkah, there's many examples where we say that. Sukkah wall doesn't have to be complete, for example. We say certain amount is considered all the way. Many, many, many examples of that concept. So, since it's mostly detached, we'll say, in some ways, it's totally, we look at it as if it's legally detached, and it's causing pain. And because it's causing pain, the rabbis say the rabbinic prohibition of removing it abnormally is gone. You're allowed to do away with it. So that would be a handy little, maybe a little hard to remember, but you have it in your notebook. You can always go back to it. That is a nice leniency to be able to pull out of your hat at different times, especially kids come and it's driving them crazy. And but again, not with clippers. Can't use clippers or scissors to remove it. That would be a biblical way of removing it. That's not allowed. And the halacha, I don't recall why this is, but the halacha only allows for this for nails and not for skin. Maybe because skin is not really considered as painful. Nails, you know, jab and all that. Could be that's the reason. So this leniency applies to nails, specifically to nails. I'll do two more points, then we'll stop for questions. Okay, so cutting off skin, pimples, those types of things are all prohibited.
Is this all approved,
It would depend on how you do it, really. Cutting off skin with scissors or clippers would be biblical. Cutting it off with your fingers, teeth, whatever, would be rabbinic. popping a pill with your fingers would be rabbinic. So all that is prohibited. The another important leniency, though, is, I mentioned in the beginning, is a blister. Someone's got a blister, and it's really causing them some pain. You are, yes, allowed to pop it. Not to start removing skin and doing a professional, you know, doctor job on it, but you can simply take a needle, you know, wash it in alcohol, and relieve the pressure. And that's really for the same rationale. It's your goal is not to remove skin, so technically speaking, it's not gozes at all. Gozes is removing, severing, or uprooting was the definition we gave. So just popping a hole is not severing or uprooting. There's pain, and therefore the rabbis say, under these circumstances, all bets are off. Should not go ahead and try to make a bleed. That would be a separate prohibition of shochet, which we'll get to. If causing stuff to bleed on Shabbos is a real problem. But just to relieve that pressure, let's say it's a water blister, a blood blister, the blood's already accumulated in there, pus, whatever it is, you're allowed to relieve that pressure. And I don't get too graphic, but just a story. I was recently Shomer Shabbos, I was 16 or something like that, and I had an infection, and it was 3-day shuas, and it was really painful. I mean, I remember it really being. And I asked around several people, can I do anything with this? And they said, you know, no, Shabbos can't do anything. Only to come to learn afterwards that it's actually perfectly, I mean, black and white, it's in the Gemara already. This isn't a debate. Ashkenazim, sorry, you know, this isn't a great area at all. Just to relieve that pressure is perfectly fine. So no one needs sulfur for no reason. I mean, it's really silly. So that's perfectly, just to relieve the pressure, again, with no fancy doctor tricks, is totally, totally permissible on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Okay, and then the last point on this page, if you're, yeah, okay, is splinters. Splinters, if, certainly, like a lot of other things, if it doesn't really bother you and you can deal with it after Shabbos, you know, that's often the easiest, safest way to go. But if one needs to remove it on Shabbos, one should certainly, you never know if it's going to bleed or not, but certainly, you know, if one can do it in a way that's going to avoid bleeding, that's certainly always a good thing. And also, as we've said in the other cases earlier, one should cut away, you know, you can cut away the skin, but one should not go out of their way to remove the skin. So that.
So are you saying that if it bothers a person, and you can take a tweezer.
Just remove it. That's the best scenario.
No,
yes.
No blood. There's
right.
No blood.
You're just
no,
taking it out.
Just pull it out.
That's always fine.
Okay.
Yeah. You have to start, you know, with the needle and start digging, you know, digging it out a little bit. That's a little more complicated. But again, if it is pain, your goal is not really to remove skin. Your goal is simply to get the splinter out. As long as you don't go out of your way to remove any of that extra skin, that's perfectly fine. And if it bleeds, if it bleeds accidentally, that's not a problem either. Okay.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it, so that he can continue that site.